Okay, Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we go, a minute past the hour, precisely a minute and 31 seconds or so past the hour. This is the Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. That's where you go if you want to jump into the chat room and enjoy the madcap, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that is the Head On Radio Network chat room during the live portion of this program from 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Monday through Friday. Good evening to Anatole and Jug of Punch and Soapbox Geezer, who were, and there's Trey, and there, yes, and so folks are filing in even as I speak, all capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a third stage guild navigator, has folded space to become man cave this evening. And Sparky, I think you may have done it a little too well. Your space folding activities are legendary, of course, but I almost started this program 20 minutes early, okay? No, really, because, see, we've had it since the network went on the air these many years ago. We've got an atomic clock, that runs on batteries, and it never gets touched, okay? But I about had a minor flip out when I walked in here, I looked at the clock, okay? I'm sitting here, I'm getting ready to do the program, I look at the clock, and the studio clock said that it was 5 minutes till 6 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. On this, the first day of April 2016, and it wasn't. So, for instance, right now it's 3 minutes and 35 seconds past the hour, but the official studio clock says that it's 23 minutes and, 40 seconds past the hour. Sparky, you folded space on the studio clock, I think. I mean, you got it. Give me a memo or something, okay? Because it makes things a little hectic because I'm about spazzed. But no, I sorted it out because I also keep an atomic clock on my phone, which allowed me to. But I have no idea. I have absolutely no idea.
We've gone down the wormhole, Bob.
No, Sparky's folded space in the studio without telling us.
Thank you, Sparky.
Being a, third stage guild navigator. And, there's Nighthawk wandering into the chat room, and there's Laborman and Stockton Larry. Oh, yeah, the gang is gathering together. Hot diggity. What do you mean, don't blame me? You're the third stage guild navigator out there folding space. But this is a bit of a, this is a watershed moment. I didn't realize you could fold space all the way from Northern California to the hills and hollers of almost level West by Coal, Virginia, Stan. Go figure. And, of course, the notes beginning to pour in. Thank you, Marty. Hello to Lady Agnes, Viking warrior princess.
I love you all.
Into the microphone. Don't. My ear doesn't work yet.
I love you all.
Yeah, okay. Thank you. So at least I actually know what time it is, but we're going to have to sort out just exactly what in the hell's going on with the studio clock at some point. But that's okay. We've been figuring out what in the hell's going on with some other equipment, too, because, well, there's a little bit of an announcement to make here. Next week is going to be interesting. The first full week of April is going to be a Jim Dandy fun extravaganza. Carol Baker, Queen of the Minions, noting that Agnes, Viking warrior princess's voice reeks with sex. Hers, not yours, meaning Agnes's, not mine. Billable Rick with a note. Is Agnes the new queen of the Brennan? Only if I'm the Brennan. And I don't want to be the Brennan, because being the Brennan, I have a feeling, is going to be a crown that sits none too comfortably. Rick, of course, is talking about, and I'm talking about, about outsiders over on WGNAmerica.com. Oh, by the way, this from Billable Rick. The Soros Challenge for this, the first day of April 2016. Did I mention the first day of April 2016? Billable Rick says, I'll kick in $100,000 today once George Soros kicks in the money that he's been promising you all of these years. Did I note that it's the first day of April 2016? But there is happy news on the fundraising front. There is indeed. Thank you to all of you for helping us. Well, we did it together. I didn't do it. We did it. We beat the Swede for the third month in a row. So that means our buddy Scott, that's our buddy Scott, will be kicking $70 into the Horn Kitty. Sometime over the weekend, I received a note from him. He was a little battered and beaten, bruised, and everything. But it was a happy beating the Swede took. So that means this month, if we finish okay with fundraising, that means it'll be an $80 bonus. And then, dare we hope it? May 90, June 100. Yeah, see how it works. It gets pretty sweet. So, sadly, I suspect that Billable Rick's note is not real. There is no $100,000 challenge on the table today because, of course, George Soros has never gotten around to sending us that great big money check because he gave it all to Hillary Clinton. Damn it! Oh, well. But we do. We try to raise $200 every evening. 10 at 20, 20 at 10, 1 at 200, 2 at 100, 4 at 50, 8 at 25, 16 at 12, 50, 32 at 6 and a quarter, and 64 at $3.13 because we have to round up. Yep. That rounded up half a cent turns into some real walking around money after a while. Yep. The PayPal interface, of course, is at headonradionetwork.com. And that's where, I just kind of had to tap on the mixer there to get the microphone back to normal. Thank you, Jeremy in Vermont, noting loud and clear from a pleasant 66-degree April 1st in Vermont. But it'll be back to 25 degrees on Sunday, otherwise loud and clear on TuneIn. Bob, thank you, Jeremy. Thank you indeed. PayPal interface is at headonradionetwork.com. And you can, of course, use the U.S. Postal Service if you don't mind sending checks and money orders to a storefront where there's a mailbox that's also, we share a storefront, and the Klan gets its mail at the same place we do. That's it. So we just kind of have to hope that the Klan doesn't steal it. Mostly we've been lucky. Okay. Billable Rick continues. Okay, since it looks like George is going to welch out on his commitment, perhaps Adolf can kick in his fair share. Or how about Fat Dead Tony? All this comes into the subject line of the Hitler Challenge, because the Hitler pool is closed for a while until we see what's going to happen with Donald T. Rump. But anyway, if you want to participate via the U.S. Postal Service, checks and money orders only, please, because Klansmen will steal cash. To The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV 25801. I get that. Marty noting, keeping to the Dune Arrakis theme, wouldn't the Lady Agnes be more of a reverend mother of the Bene Gesserit? Believe you me, Agnes is a reverend mother of the Bene Gesserit, just not with that sort of half-shaven skull-looking kind of thing. But she's more like the you know, beautiful Lady Jessica kind of reverend mother. Exactly. Because, you know, the Reverend Mother Helen Gaius Mohim always kind of creeped me out in the movie. But there's a lot of creepy things in that movie, so we understand. I spent the day fooling around with technology and making sure that things worked the way they were supposed to work. Because next week is going to be very, very interesting. Oh, hi! I'm Bob Kincaid at 11 minutes past the hour. Got that out of the way. But you guys are falling down on the job. Where's Tim? There's Tim. So next week, our dear friends the Malloys are on vacation. So I, in turn, will be filling in for Mike Monday through Friday of next week. Of course, his program's 2 hours now instead of three, and since he's gone internet-based, All those maddening advertising breaks aren't there. So I have a feeling it's going to be a madcap zany extravaganza, I really do. And instead of just, you know, bailing out on this program altogether, here's my plan. You tell me what you think of it. We have to make sure that we hit our marks at the top of the hour for Malloy. So my thinking is that we'll do a two-hour program here and a two-hour program there, all without ever leaving this chair, which probably involves some space folding in itself. Blessed be the Maker in his comings and goings. So Monday through Friday of next week, this program will air from 6 to 8 p.m., and then the Malloy program with me filling in will air from 9 to 11 p.m. Sound good? Sounds good to me. I think it can work. I think we can come up with 4 hours of material this time of year, this place, That's not going to be a big challenge. So that's where we stand. What about tonight, Trey? Tonight the program ends at 9 p.m. That just has how it has to be, because I'm a little bit exhausted for reasons that don't bear a lot of discussion. Okay, Tim from L.A. says, I'll meet Billable Rick's challenge and match his $100,000 courtesy of the Mill and Belinda Bates Foundation. On a side note, being that you have lawyers, please note my caveat, April 1st, too many smart lefty lawyers in this family. Got it. No, we'll settle for $200. Thanks very kindly to Randy, who is always first past the post getting us started, and to Chris, who got us an early start from Germany. Chris was tickled to see that the Swede got beaten. So that actually means we got $100 to raise. And that's it. One at 10, or one at 100, et cetera, 10 at 10, 5 at 20, yada, yada. And we'll be golden. Yay! All right. So, do we have all the housekeeping out of the way? I think we do. So last night, after the program was over, I Sparky kindly provided me the link to watch the Bernie rally in the Bronx, and I found it very much engaging. I mean, 27,000 people gathered in the Bronx to hear from folks like Rosario Dawson and Spike Lee, and of course, the man himself, Senator Bernie Sanders. 27,000 people in the Bronx. That's a big deal. It's a big deal. So I thought I would look over to America's newspaper of record and just see what they had to say about it. You know, the New York Times. The gang in the tank. The people who just wish that Sanders fellow would go away. The newspaper that subtly, over time, modifies newspaper articles that are positive reflections on Senator Sanders' career in the Congress to turn it into a snide little hit piece. Yeah, that New York Times. So, I mean, you know, maybe I was just late getting to it. But here, I don't have the hard copy of the New York Times. We can't afford such luxuries here. But I'm sure it would have been put to bed by then. Anyway, so here is today's online front page of the New York Times. Now remember, 27,000 excited, motivated Americans showed up in the Bronx, which is really not all that far from the headquarters of the New York Times, to hear and support Bernie Sanders, who, incidentally, raised a whopping $44 million, a buck, $2, $3, $4, $5 at a time last month. And you know what? I'll bet you Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton is so sick of hearing about all the money that Bernie Sanders has raised. So here's the front page of the New York Times on the day after a monumental, humongous 27,000-person rally for Bernie Sanders. Outraged by Kansas rulings, GOP seeks to reshape court. GOP fears Trump as zombie, damaged but unstoppable. As convention fight looms, Republicans focus on delegates. U.S. kept up pace of hiring in March, adding 215,000 jobs. Years of warnings about foster father charged with abuse. Then there's, let's see, police body cameras never lie. Test your perceptions. A CIA grunt's tale of the fog of secret war. Wall Street watchdog still growls on a tighter leash. A front row seat to misery. Some sports photography story. Op-ed, more than a female architect. Op-ed, Obama's clemency problem. Editorial, the danger of a runaway Antarctica. Krugman, Obama's success. Cohen, a time of bullies. Egan, dude, where's my city? Op-ed, Assyrian refugees' message to Europe. In the Sunday Review, the dirty old men of Pakistan and how the $15 minimum wage went from laughable to viable. No mention there, of course, of the man who has been championing the $15 minimum wage, or his opponent, who says that maybe sometime between now and the next century, we might possibly conceivably get to $12.03 an hour, but never, ever $15 an hour. Now, I haven't messed around. Let's see. Students at several colleges are clashing with officials and debating free speech limits after finding chalk messages supporting Donald J. Trump sprawled on campus property. The dropping of criminal charges could affect a civil suit against a man who is accused of posting revenge porn of a former girlfriend online. Times Insider. How the Times covers breaking news. The first 12 hours of the Brussels bombing. Play today's crossword puzzle. It was a bad week for Lions and a bad century for Lions. Two were killed this week in Kenya, where activists say a road and a rail project is disrupting their habitat. An exhibit opening on Friday at Liberty Science Center in Jersey City lets visitors try on a robotic suit that simulates the sight, hearing, and mobility of an 85-year-old. And it goes on that way. And no, in case you were wondering, okay, so let's go down to the politics section and see what the here's the politics section. First draft, John Kasich presses super PAC to pull ad assailing Ted Cruz. First draft, Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders there. Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders spar over fossil fuel donations. As floor fight looms, GOP convention delegates become a hot commodity. Unable to pay $100 bail, homeless man dies in New Hampshire jail. Jesus Christ. On religion. Before Sanders, there was Frank Zeidler, a religious socialist. Out in the wilds of Vancouver, the wilds of lovely springtime Vancouver. Brother Deacon Asa says, Bob, if you're trying to make a case that the New York Times is a birdcage liner, I'm afraid to inform you, we already know. Well, okay, but see, there's more than that. It's not just that it's a birdcage liner. It's that it's a shameless birdcage liner. But I do know, now, we had the story yesterday. You know what happened. But really, I mean, it's not even, it doesn't even, and even the story about Hillary and Bernie and the fracking business, that's not even above the fold. You gotta scroll your happy little ass off to get down to that story on the New York Times. I mean, this is pathetic. This is pitiable. But let's take, just for the all of it, let's take the story of Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton and the fracking stuff, and let's compare that to what we know. Now, a Greenpeace activist, that's all Eva was, a Greenpeace activist. She wasn't some stealth Sanders supporter. She wasn't diabolically placed to cause Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton to come completely unglued and start screaming in her face. She was just a Greenpeace activist who wanted to know about money in politics, and particularly fracking money in politics, because, see, a lot of people have had their water ruined by fracking. You remember the clip, right, I trust? Yeah?
If you protect climate change, will you act on your words and reject fossil fuel money in the future in your campaign?
You guys are not going to have money from people who work for fossil fuel companies. I am so sick of the Sanders campaign lying about me. I'm sick of her.
I agree with you, Sanders, on the cause of
The problem being, of course, that the Sanders campaign had nothing to do with Eva. She just asked a question about... But there's the larger question of, I don't have fossil fuel money in my campaign. Workers for fossil fuel companies give to my campaign. Is it just me? Or is that sort of a distinction without a difference? Yeah, people who work for fossil fuel companies give me money. Fossil fuel companies don't give me money. Except that's, of course, a little bit of a lie. So, we know the story. You're all well aware of it by now. And it was a moment in which we saw Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton get... she just sidled right up next door to completely Stephen King unhinged. I mean, she looked like she wanted to. She looked like she was ready to chew poor Eva's face off. And how does the Times report it? Updated 6:01 p.m. Hillary Clinton defended her commitment. Hi, Barbie. Hillary Clinton defended her commitment to combating climate change on Friday after an eruption with Senator Bernie Sanders over whether she accepts campaign contributions from the fossil fuel industry rattled the relatively civil Democratic contest as both candidates vie for support in New York. New York, which has a moratorium on fracking, last I checked. But you notice how... the relatively civil Democratic contest was rattled. It was the relatively civil Democratic contest that was rattled, not Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton, who almost chewed the face off of a Greenpeace activist. A day after Mrs. Clinton grew enraged, telling a young climate change activist after a rally in Purchase, New York, that she was sick of the Sanders campaign lying about her accepting political donations from the fossil fuel industry, Mr. Sanders doubled down on the accusation, telling ABC's Good Morning America on Friday that Mrs. Clinton had taken significant money from the fossil fuel industry. That is some damned, slippery, slimy, interesting language. Yeah, you'll notice. Yeah, no, they don't. They don't. They don't say that. Democratic primary front runner, Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton was rattled. She's never rattled. Because to say that she was rattled would indicate probably improper tone. Mm-hmm. And the third paragraph, the encounter on Thursday was not the first time Mrs. Clinton has been confronted by activists affiliated with Greenpeace, but it came as the two Democrats fight to win liberal support as the race turns toward New York's April 19th primary. Confronted by activists affiliated with Greenpeace. Confronted. Man, that's a powerish word. Hey, guys over at the New York Times. How about we use a word that sounds a little bit less threatening? How about questioned? Because see, wait. Let's go back to this again. You tell me if this sounds confronty or questiony. You make the call. Wait, no.
You make the call.
Okay.
companies. I am so sick. I am so sick of the Sanders campaign lying about me. I'm sick of them.
That sounded like a question. It didn't sound like a confronted by Greenpeace. Blah. That's just a question. But see, if you ask Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton a question that Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton does not like, you're confronting. Now, on the other hand, if you're at a handshaking line and a meet and greet and you say, Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton, how much do you love puppies and kitties? Well, that's a question. Carol Baker says, I've been asked for makeup tips more aggressively. But I have to at least give credit where credit is due to the New York Times, to Amy Chozick and Yamiche Alcindor. Wait, oh my God, I recognize that name. How could I forget? Yamiche Alcindor was the reporter who reported about Bernie Sanders speaking to the older members of a black church in South Carolina while standing next to fried chicken. Yeah, that Yamiche Alcindor. Meanwhile, coming from Darlene up in Connecticut, a question. I don't know. It might be a confrontation. Subject line: Hillary. Did she call the questioner honey? You know, like she did in Minnesota. Well, honey, why don't you just run for office someday? At least we dodged that. No, credit where credit's due to Amy Chozick and Yamiche Alcindor, who apparently couldn't find any fried chicken for Senator Clinton to stand next to. You know, a day after Mrs. Clinton grew enraged. Why for you try confront me about fracking in the cold, cold ground and rabbits? She grew enraged. God, doesn't that just churn up some visual images for you? But I mean, it's kind of hard to avoid you because she took her finger and just stuck it and just pointed at the young lady. Just pointed it like, I'm gonna gouge out your fucking eye. Yeah. Polls show that Mrs. Clinton's significant lead in her adopted home state has narrowed in recent weeks as Mr. Sanders' promise to take on Wall Street and special interests has resonated with liberals in New York City and in economically hard-hit areas upstate. Oh, well, okay. As long as it's just liberals that it's resonating with. I mean, we wouldn't want to say that the people it was resonating with were, you know, Americans or hard-working Americans or middle-class Americans, or people struggling to get by on a paltry, pissant minimum wage. We wouldn't want to say it was... No. The only people... God damn it! The only people that Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton is that Bernie Sanders is resonating with is liberals. And people in economically hard-hit areas upstate, because you know what? If you're comfortable and you're happy, there is no need for you to worry about economic inequality. If you've got yours, F everybody else. And go vote for Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton in New York, by all means. Because the only people the Senator Sanders resonates with is liberals. And then finally, how many paragraphs? How many? One, two, three, four, five. On Thursday, Mr. Sanders, introduced by famous New Yorkers, including the actress Rosario Dawson and the filmmaker Spike Lee, addressed a crowd of thousands of people. 18,500 is what the Sanders campaign said in the South Bronx. Other numbers included numbers as high as 27,000. Mrs. Clinton, meanwhile, kicked off her New York campaign at a rally at the Apollo Theater on Wednesday. Why no reference to numbers there? Well, I mean, it's the Apollo Theater. It doesn't hold 18,500. She could have had 18,500 people if she'd wanted. On Friday, that would be today, she held a roundtable discussion at the Institute of Technology at Syracuse Central High School, during which she unveiled a $10 billion proposal to bolster jobs in manufacturing. The event was the beginning of a concerted effort by Mrs. Clinton to win back the voters upstate, who twice elected her a New York senator. Curiously, no mention of the number of people at the Institute of Technology at Syracuse Central High School. And then we rapidly go back to the business with young Ms. Eva. The back and forth began Thursday when, at the event in Purchase, a Greenpeace USA activist asked Mrs. Clinton to pledge to reject fossil fuel contributions. Mrs. Clinton tersely responded, saying, "I am so sick! I am so sick of the Sanders campaign lying about me! I am sick of it!" Oddly enough, the question was not, "Madam, are you sick of the Sanders campaign lying about you?" which the appropriate response would be, "I am sick, I am so sick of the Sanders campaign lying about me." No, the question was, will you stop taking money from people in the fossil fuel industry? Mm-hmm. And that's what caused Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton to momentarily jab at the lady with her outstretched index finger, the young woman, jab at the young woman with her outstretched index finger, and sort of get, I was reminded of nothing so much as maybe Bruce Banner getting ready to turn into the Hulk. Later, her campaign addressed the issue. So we've got a quote about a couple of paragraphs up from Jake Sullivan, Mrs. Campaign's policy director, as president, she'll create good-paying jobs. Okay. Then we've got another quote. Later, her campaign addressed the issue, you know, the issue of her taking her stiffened index finger and looking as though she wanted to gouge out the eye of the young woman from Greenpeace. "The simple truth is that this campaign has not taken a dollar from oil and gas industry PACs or corporations," Nick Merrill, a spokesman for Mrs. Clinton's campaign, said in a statement. "The simple fact is that the Sanders campaign is misleading voters with their attacks. The money in question is from individuals who work for these companies." Yeah. And that makes all the difference in the world, you see. Don't you understand? So then they hauled out Mayor de Blasio there in New York, who they put on a conference call to say, "Any suggestion that she is in anyone's pocket on the issue of climate change or any other issue is flat out false and inappropriate." Fighting climate change has been a central force throughout her career. You know, except when she wasn't. So then, again, way the down in the story, I knew there would be a response. Jeremy in Vermont saying, now, Bob, don't go and offend Bruce Banner like that. She's much closer to DC Comics' Harvey Dent. You know, Two-Face. So Amy Chozick and Yamiche Alcindor finally get around to saying that they had checked with the Center for Responsive Politics. Of the $157.8 million the Clinton campaign has raised overall, $307,561 has come from individuals who work in the oil and gas industries. The Sanders campaign has raised more than $50,000 from individuals who work in the oil and gas industries. Yeah, here's the problem. They finally did reach out to Bernie's campaign manager, Jeff Weaver, who said, you know, 57 lobbyists from the industry have personally given to her campaign, and 11 of those lobbyists have bundled more than $1 million to help put her in the White House. If you include money given to super PACs back in Clinton, the fossil fuel industry has given more than $4.5 million in support of Clinton's bid. And, of course, you can count super PACs. Why? Because, unlike Senator Sanders, Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton won't reject the use of super PACs. Meanwhile, unable to deal with that reality, Justin Borowski, who is a spokesman for Priorities USA Action, that would be a super PAC in Mrs. Clinton's orbit. By the Sanders campaign's own metric, they have taken fossil fuel money, but instead of attacking other Democrats, we're focused on stopping Donald Trump and Ted Cruz from becoming president. Okay, well, great. Then get behind the guy whose numbers show that he will soundly thump them. Surrender, Dorothy. Jesus, this is pathetic. They close out this story. Amy and Yamiche do. By saying, she has proposed a far-reaching climate change plan. Okay, journalism moment. Journalism moment. The road to hell is paved with modifiers. She has proposed a far-reaching climate change plan that would install a half billion solar panels in American homes by the end of her first term. In American homes. In. I don't know, maybe down in the basement. Sort of reminiscent of what George Carlin used to say about aircraft. They tell you to get on the plane. Fuck them, I'm getting in the plane. Let them get on the plane. She's got a plan to install a half a billion, 500 million solar panels in American homes. Get right there, maybe next to that old oil painting of Mount Rainier. Or maybe they can just use it for a bathroom mirror in American homes. But no, the road to hell is paved with modifiers. She has proposed a far-reaching climate change plan. I don't know how far-reaching a climate change plan is that would install a half a billion solar panels in American homes if it's not dealing with, say, the fact that we're now looking at a climate change model that shows melting ice from the West Antarctic ice shelf could be responsible up for something on the order of a 3 to 6 foot. Was that the number? 3 to 6 feet? Sea level rise by 2100? You know, not like 2500 like some of the previous, no, 2100. That's a date that, for instance, children born today might expect to reasonably see at the end of an old age or a great age. Or maybe they'll be, maybe they'll just be entering middle age by then if they're members of the 1%. I'm sorry, that story was disturbing as hell. Because it means that virtually every great coastal city on the planet is, to one degree or another, underwater by the next century. Not 2 or 3 or 4 centuries down the road, as had been predicted. And that goes without, it goes without saying that every major coastal city in the world. And that means a whole lot of places that aren't major coastal cities, which, oddly enough, still have human beings on it, will be underwater, too. I mean, Jesus Christ, with numbers like that, Knoxville, Tennessee could wind up being beachfront property. There could be a goddamn seaport in Atlanta. I'm probably exaggerating. Wow. That's a little rough, but Steve in China says, great anti-campaign ad. Bob, that's one postmenopausal old curlers in the hair hysterical screech of a bitch you don't need to deal with the first thing in the morning before or after your first cup of coffee. I guess she'd have her hands full, hands on the nuclear football too, huh? Hilarious. Well, my politically incorrect slip is showing, so I'm out of here. Regards, Steve in China. Subject line, shooting the foot, courtesy of the marvelously coherent Diane from Kansas, Stan. Mrs. Clinton yelling at a voter reminds me of businesses arguing with their consumers. It's not a good judgment in either case. The optics don't look good, as they say. Of course, perhaps Mrs. Clinton doesn't think she needs us. That's the impression I get. Signed, Diane in Kansas, Stan. You know what the first thing I thought of when I saw that? And sadly, this was before the proliferation of easy videography. I thought of that that rope line. It was in Philadelphia, wasn't it? Shortly after the installation of Dim Leader as President of the United States. By the Supreme Court. Thanks, Sandra Day O'Connor. No, really, thank you so fucking much. Where people were shaking hands with Dim Leader, and he comes up to one guy, and the guy says, "You are a terrible president." And Dim Leader said, who gives a fuck what you think? And moves along. A question coming from Marty. Bob, please clarify, how responsible is a candidate for what a super PAC does or says? I keep seeing links to stories claiming to detail high-dollar super PACs for Bernie. No candidate can prevent a super PAC from being formed. However, candidates can refuse to coordinate with super PACs, can refuse to acknowledge super PACs, and can refuse to have any super PACs under their direction or control. Hillary has a super PAC. Bernie doesn't have a super PAC. When I've seen where super PACs have popped up and Bernie has said, I don't want anything to do with you. Stop. Don't do anything on my behalf. And the millions of dollars that Bernie Sanders is raising are being raised directly to his campaign. What people do with super, what other people do in terms of, no one can control it. Still, if they're out there, they can be actively disavowed, which he does. Marty notes, during the Sanders event, apparently Rosario Dawson read Dolores Huerta, the Riot Act. I watched it. Maybe I missed that point. It was kind of busy around here last night. Honest to God, Carol, one of these evenings, I want to hear about these aggressively sought makeup tips. I do. Oh, and while we're talking about energy companies, let's talk about Sempra. This has nothing to do with Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton. This is just embarrassing and disgusting. Ooh, I'd forgotten about that, Jeremy. Jeremy says, how about that time when CBS followed Dim Leader and Bill down to Haiti after the Christmas earthquake a few years back, and how a cameraman caught Dim Leader wiping off his hands on Bill's shirt after he had shaken a darker child's hand. I'd forgotten about that. But no, Sempra. Sempra is the parent company to Southern California Gas. In turn, Southern California Gas controls and owns the Aliso Canyon facility. The Aliso Canyon facility is near Porter Ranch, California. You may recall that they had a storage well there that just leaked millions, if not billions, of cubic meters of gas into the atmosphere there. It was a disaster. But, you know, you can't see gas, so what you can't see can kill you. Well, if you were wondering if there were any consequences, any repercussions for what happened there. Well, yeah, but no, not really. Over at the Los Angeles Times, Michael Hiltzik reporting. The CEO of Sempra, the parent company of Southern California Gas, is Deborah Reed. And after the Aliso Canyon disaster, the board of Sempra cut her pay by about $130,000. That'll show her. Yeah, $130,000. I mean, that's a whole lot more money than, let's see. On April the 6th, Don Blankenship will be sentenced. He faces up to a $250,000 fine for evading safety regulations that led to the incineration of 29 human beings on April 5th, 2010 at Massey Energy's Upper Big Branch mine. Yes, $250,000. But, you know, nobody got incinerated in Aliso Canyon. Maybe some people got poisoned. But it's not like they'll ever be able to sue over it. So, by God, those take no bullshit board members from Sempra cut Deborah Reed's pay $130,000. Don't let it happen again, Deborah. Oh, wait. Then they gave her a $3.17 million bonus. Yeah, no, really. Don't ever let it happen again, Deborah. So her 2015 compensation came to $16.1 million. And apparently Michael Hiltzik at the Los Angeles Times is a lot better at ciphering and gazettas than I am. Because he figured out that that works out to about 0.8% of her pay amounting to a financial penalty for the massive environmental disaster that was the Aliso Canyon leak. Oh, 100,000 tons of methane. Largest methane leak in the United States history. Those 100,000 tons of methane having a force multiplier effect on climate change that is something approaching exponentially greater than the same amount of plain old boring carbon dioxide. Michael Hiltzik continued and wrote, "The health consequences for thousands of residents are unclear. Legally speaking, the leak is a black hole that could suck Reed's operational record into the void. The position of the Sempra Board of Directors, on the other hand, is that the Porter Ranch disaster is a safety and customer satisfaction issue warranting minimal penalties for the executives who presided over it. The board's discussions of its compensation policies is a pure distillation of the reality that corporate executives can collect huge raises despite underperformance in key areas." So, out there in Southern California, suck it up, Buttercup! Mm-hmm. And a note coming from Randy in PA, who was first in on April's fundraising this morning. Thank you, Randy. Thank you kindly. Between Randy and Chris, they got April started at with only $100 to go this evening, which is impressive. Randy says, "I'm not clear on what is a bundler and what is a super PAC." Well, a super PAC is an organization that is created. It's a creature of the our disastrously corrupt campaign finance laws. PAC, of course, standing for Political Action Committee. And a super PAC is a political action committee on steroids. And it uses its money as it sees fit and does not have to disclose where the money comes from or anything like that. As Lottie points out in the chat room, super PAC equals slush fund. A bundler, however, is a pretty name for a political pimp. In fact, if we wanted to be more accurate, that would be the noun we used. Pimp. A bundler is somebody who goes around and cajoles and harangues and glad hands and backslaps other people with lots and lots of money to come up with massive amounts of money that are then provided to a campaign. Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton, for instance, has many, many bundlers. For instance, the bundler, one of whom is a lobbyist or former lobbyist for the fracking industry in Pennsylvania, who has bundled up oodles of money from his fracking cronies to give to Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton. And they don't do this out of altruism. They don't do they do this because, well, there's an old term that is slightly tangential called star fucking. For instance, the dinner that George Clooney hosted or will host, can't remember, for Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton, in which $347,000 gets you a seat at the head table, and you're part of the organizing committee, and you get to hobnob and swan and soiree with Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton. And what a good time that must be. Well, those dinners are a means of, you know, bundling. Of course, in some colloquial versions of English, bundling is also a word for people who get together and copulate. You know, fuck. And again, they do this because, in the case of star fucking, being close to power makes them feel better themselves. Yes, yes, here's a photograph of me and my dear friend Hillary Clinton. Yes. I was bundling with her one evening. I was bundling for her. I was bundling with other people. But I was bundling, and someone said, "Hey, smile." And I smiled, and behold the photograph. Yeah, good one, Sparky. And you know, this happens at, you know, dinners, and the food is notoriously bad. And as Randy in PA says, I'm so sick of this rubber chicken. Yes, Dr. Larry in the chat room, I think that's right. It does make George Clooney a Californicator. But starfuckers are just absolutely taken with the idea of having been close to power. And they'll tell the story at Thanksgiving dinner tables, and it'll be told down through the generations. Mommy, was Gampy really a star fucker? Yes, he was. He helped bundle $1 million for Hillary Clinton one time so he could get a photograph taken with her. Yeah, you get the idea. It's about 4 minutes past the hour. And I'm just pulling up. It will soon be time to go to the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. That's what we do on Friday on the front porch, which this is. We will go there in fairly short order. If you've never participated in Friday on the front porch and you would like to, on Skype, send a contact request to Sparky Dunk. In your contact request, say something like Friday on the front porch, Horn Malloy Skype group, something like that. so that Sparky will know that you're not just someone else trying to get him to participate in your scheme to save the money of a Nigerian prince whose wife is suffering from cancer. Okay. Right. So what'll happen is once you friend up with Sparky, he'll send you the breadcrumb trail and show you how to follow the Bob signal. So let's take a little break. Fire up the extraordinary, ordinary roundtable that is Friday on the front porch, and see what y'all have. What's on y'all's mind. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
And if you want these kind of dreams, it's Californication. It's the edge of the world in all of Western civilization. The sun may rise in the east, at least it's settled in a final location. It's understood that Hollywood sells California. Gender is that war you're waging. Firstborn unicorn, hardcore, softcore. Dream of Californication. Dream of Californication. A teenage bride with a baby inside, getting high on information. And buy me a star on a boulevard, it's Californication. Space may be the final frontier, but it's made in a Hollywood basement. And Cobain, can you hear the sphere singing songs off station to station? And Eldorado's not far away, it's Californication. Born and raised by those who praise control of population. Everybody's been there and I don't need no vacation. Firstborn unicorn. An earthquake's out to a girl's guitar. They're just another good vibration. And tidal waves couldn't save the world from California.
I love that song. I love the Red Hot Chili Peppers. And yeah, one of those bands that still sounds, you know, like it came out yesterday, kind of. This is The Horn, Friday on the Front Porch. It's 11 minutes past the hour, not 31 minutes past the hour like the folded space horn studio clock says. And so consequently, it's time to get started, albeit 11 minutes late. Get started with the Friday on the Front Porch Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable featuring the Horn Malloy Skype chat group. Good evening, Sparky.
Good evening, Bob.
How are you?
I'm fine. It's 4:12 here in the man cave.
Yes, yeah, I don't know how you did that.
I don't know how. I wouldn't fold space to West Virginia today anyway. It's a beautiful day here. Not a cloud in the sky unless you go out and look at Mount Lassen.
What?
Did you know mountains generate their own clouds?
They can. Yes, they can. Well, Appalachia does.
Well, it's like a stream of clouds coming out of the top of Mount Lassen going to the north.
Well, in my case, I can drive about 4 miles or less, actually. And on some mornings, I can see the clouds being born 800 feet below me and watch mm-hmm. them bubble up out of the gorge into the sky where they fly away. Fly away, happy clouds, fly away.
But other than that, my new hobby now is following hashtags.
Oh, yeah?
So. Well, I got started with that when the Oregon thing was going on. And so now that Hillary keeps doing these buffoonery stunts, or her spokespeople, I'm following the one. I'm so sick.
That's why I'm
getting all the memes that I've been posting on Facebook and stuff.
Any particular favorites?
Oh, the one you saw, Gambling for Us, with she's speaking from a slot machine.
Yeah.
And then there's the one out today, just released by Goldman Sachs Transcripts, April Fools.
Yeah, really?
You can have the transcripts, and you can when you pry them from Hillary's cold, dead hands.
No, you know, I remain convinced of this, and I say this in all sincerity. I know when the transcripts of her Goldman Sachs speeches are going to be released. They will
October.
If she is
hell freezes over.
No. If she is the Democrat, oh come on, the Republicans already have them. Her Goldman Sachs speeches will be released.
Halloween.
If she is the Democratic nominee about 2 weeks before the election.
Unless Anonymous gets it first.
Anonymous won't get it. I don't think.
Hope they do.
I wish they would. But what I really wish is that she would quit with this business
this obfuscation. And I mean, if there's nothing to hide, quit hiding it. I mean, isn't it that simple? If there's nothing to hide, quit hiding it. Now, and I realize, Billable Rick, that probably violates some of your basic principles as a lawyer. It bothers me some with my little education. You know, you don't need no right to remain silent if you ain't done nothing wrong.
Well, that's true, but this is a public figure, and it's the court of public opinion, not a court of law. Two different matters.
Amen. And it's also a matter of this is an issue that is central to the campaign, whether she likes it or not. You know, the obsequy with which we treat the massive financial institutions of our country.
Yeah, I mean, she wishes the campaign wasn't about that in part, but it is. Bernie has made it so, and people have responded, and I think even some of the people voting for T. Rump are drawn to his message that he's supposedly self-funded, although I think there are some doubts now being cast on even that claim.
Well, I can... No, he's not self-funded. He's receiving contributions.
Yeah, he is.
But the thing is, he hasn't had to run any goddamn ads.
I know. He's had so much free press. I wonder when he's going to get the bill from NBC, ABC, CBS, Fox, CNN.
I mean, do you realize that the actual cash fair market value of the free press that he's received is measured in billions of dollars?
I had heard that. Like, what about $4 billion or something like that? Or $3 billion?
Oh, it's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then Mrs. Greenspan has the nerve to go on Meet the Prestitutes and say, you know, that man doesn't know anything. I just realized that. He's a complete goddamn moron.
Yeah. Well, he is, and I think finally the press is catching on to it. I mean, they kind of knew it all along. But they're like, you know, pretending now they know.
Well, no, yeah.
Some of them are slow learners.
Well, but yeah. No. See, I don't buy that for a minute, Sparky. This is Louie at Rick's Cafe American saying, I'm shocked to find out there's gambling going on here. You're winning, sir. Oh, thank you.
Yeah, right. Right. I mean, you know, the media obviously knew about this guy all along. I think what has really turned the tide this past week is his statements about abortion. He basically changed his position like three times within 3 hours, you know. And, you know, like, what punishment should these women get? Well, I suppose he'd probably like to spank them if in his world, you know.
A spanking, naughty zoot.
There you go. And then another thing, I think, was his proposal to basically nuclearize the Korean Peninsula, which made people think, my God, this guy's like batshit crazy. What the hell are we doing propping this kind of guy up?
And he's losing ground to Cruz in Wisconsin. And, you know, I'm not a fan. I saw a video, and I want to loop back around to something else in a minute, Rick. But I saw a video. I posted it last night. And I described it as a vision of two Americas. It's a guy who is, I mean, he's known as the free hugs guy. And it's a video of his disparate experiences offering free hugs at a Bernie rally and free hugs at a Trump rally. And, you know, the response that he got at the Trump rally was everything from middle fingers to fuck you, and all manner of various nastiness in between. Meanwhile, at the Bernie rally, it's just video of people smiling. Some of them get tears in their eyes at the idea, and giving out hugs. And meanwhile, there's video of a Hillary rally where she says, "I am so sick of people trying to give out free hugs. We are never, ever going to be a free hug country. This is not Denmark. No, I'm sorry. That, I made that part up.
Well, sometimes truth is stranger than fiction, though, Bob, so you can't always tell if it's written by The Onion or if it's real news, you know, these days.
But I want to loop back to something you said, because you referenced Trump's abortion problem. Well, he's now trailing Ted Cruz in Wisconsin. And I think he's going to lose to Cruz in Wisconsin for the same reason he lost in Minnesota. And that's that upper Midwestern nice. Folks in Minnesota and like northern Iowa and Wisconsin, they don't like it when people are just shitty from jump. I mean, when
no, they don't.
You know, when somebody up there gets really, 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 really mad at you, they'll say, "I'm really, 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 really mad at you and disappointed too." And well, by God, you've been told.
Yeah.
But so I won't be surprised. And of course, Snot Walker has declared that he desperately wants to see Ted Cruz naked. No, he said he supports Ted Cruz. because they're both son of preacher men.
Right.
And they're both son of, you know, gospel sharp hustlers. But the larger question, I mean, something really, really interesting happened when Donald Trump said that we have to be careful about this. We have to get the setup right. Donald Trump said, if abortion were made illegal, which he said he wants to see. Now, in the past, he was pro-choice, which tells you that you don't even have to give up about abortion. You just have to say something about it in order to score points with the white wing religion industry in this country. But he said, if abortion were made illegal, that a woman should be punished if she had one. Now, granted, he later backtracked. I said, no, the doctor should be punished. One of the most interesting comments on this came from our buddy Beth in Dallas, who dedicated her life to making sure that women could have safe reproductive health care choices, and for whom I have a tremendous degree of respect and admiration. I mean, we read stories about what these nasty people... these nasty little right-wingers do. Beth lived them every day of her career. And so Beth said, at least when Donald Trump says that a woman who has an abortion should be punished, he is acknowledging that she is a real human being exercising her own agency. And not simply some manipulated thing, some sort of helpless creature.
A victim.
Yeah, exactly. And so I that really resonated with me. And what I find interesting out of all this is that Trump's comments, and I don't think this qualifies as giving him free airtime. This is a discussion of his policy and, you know, his sickness. His comments have engendered a real debate inside among the birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, baggers, birchers, booger eaters, and toenail toothpick society about women who have abortions. And it has exposed a real division inside the right wing. And it's fascinating. For instance, we haven't heard from helmet-headed, proud son of Stanford University. Brian Fisher in quite a long time. Let's check in with him.
What it is, there is moral culpability. A woman is not off the hook morally for what she does. And I think we may be able to get to the point if everybody comes to understand. Here's the issue. We need to get the culture to the place where everybody understands that it's a baby. And if we can do that, if we get a cultural consensus that that is a baby in the womb, then I think at that point you can begin to talk about legal consequences for the mothers. But right now, not everybody believes that. We want the culture to understand that. In the meantime, we want to save as many babies as we can, which means we've got to stop the abortionists. You know, we still hold a mother capable. If she gives birth to her baby and then she flushes it down the toilet or she throws it into a dumpster, which happens, I mean, reading stories like that, you know, every week I'll read a story like that. We hold the mothers accountable. Why? Because everybody knows, including the mother, everybody understands that that is a baby. And therefore, the legal consequences have to be brought to bear. Right now, we don't have that consensus as a culture. We couldn't get there if we tried. But we can find a way to put abortion clinics out of business. We can find a way to go after abortionists for what they do. And I think that's where we need to focus. So there is moral culpability for a woman who does it. In fact, the reality is a lot of times what happens to women is they do not realize how morally culpable they are for what happened until later. And then the reality of what they have done kind of crashes in on them. And then it just devastates them when they realize what they have done. They didn't know better. Nobody told them. Nobody tried to talk them out of it. Nobody explained the humanity of the baby in the womb. And so they did not know what they were doing.
Does anybody even believe that?
Okay, hold the phone. I'm the woman on the panel here. Okay.
Yes, you are.
This is absolute bullshit. I've had two abortions. One was medical necessity, as I was carrying a severely deformed fetus, which I would not be able to do in the state of Indiana as of last week, thanks to Governor Pence signing one of our new laws into place. And it's not a matter of women being not told their moral obligation. It's not a matter of moral obligation. It's a matter of a woman's choice. We are not bonds that have no brain and no ability to be able to make a decision as to what's going on with our own bodies and what's going on with our own brains. And it's not a baby. It's a fetus. It's a clump of fucking cells.
Hey, Jules.
Yes.
Got a question for you.
Yes, dear.
After women have abortions, how many of them get like struck by lightning out of the clear blue sky, or let's say get brain cancer and like tip over and die?
You know, Walt, none of them.
That's what I thought.
You know, one of the things, there's a doctor in Georgia, I believe it might be, that's been trying to be forced out of business by a law that's coming into that they're trying to put in place because his clinic's too close to an elementary school, and they're trying to say that he has to tell women that having an abortion can cause breast cancer, and he has to tell women this, and it's not true, but he can't tell them otherwise.
This is a law or what?
Yeah, that's part of what he has, the spiel that he has to give them.
Under what state law? Is this Indiana?
No, it's in Georgia. Cases. It was actually headlined on John Oliver. He did a bit on abortion here a couple of months ago. But okay. I did a follow-up on it, and the case is coming to fruition right now, where the state is trying to force him out of business because his clinic is within so many yards of, or so many feet of an elementary school or a middle school or something like that.
You know, I wonder
or,
if this,
or a church or a
guy,
tavern or, right.
Yeah.
I wonder if this guy would fare better if he was like a drug dealer living within a certain distance of a school.
Yeah.
Or a gun dealer.
I guess that would be okay.
Yeah, God knows if he was a gun dealer, they'd be giving him. But there's a question here, and I think you touched on it, Rick. and that is, these people's objections to abortion are all based upon their bizarre, sick, twisted, arguably mentally ill, religious obsessions. And of course, they're just faith-based as fuck. So right. why can't, I mean, if a woman needs to be punished for having an abortion, why can't they just let their God do his own damn job?
Well, yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I mean, drop a house on her, hit her with a lightning bolt.
I mean, open up everybody
a
knows
the ground
that's
and
what...
let the earth swallow her, a big rolling boulder, tornado.
I mean, I'll give you a perfect example, Bob, of that happening in real life. Johnny Cochran got O.J. Simpson off of double murder, and like within years, not just a few years thereafter, developed brain cancer and died. There you go.
Ooh.
Right?
The Lord moves in, the Lord moves in mysterious ways.
and then Robert Kardashian got stomach cancer as well and died at a young age as well. There you go.
Hey Rick,
that would be a lie.
Huh? Rick, have you been watching that series on FX?
Oh, that's a tremendous series. People versus O.J. Simpson, yeah. Yeah. You have too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, but I also want to back up to something Jules mentioned, because I don't know if y'all are aware of it. Something really, really, really nasty happened in Talibandiana. They've decided... Now, tell me if I get this wrong, Jules. They decided to pass a law that said that if a woman is diagnosed as carrying an HB 1337, bans all abortions in cases involving a lethal fetal anomaly.
Yes, correct.
In other words, if the fetus has a defect that is going to kill it, the mother is forbidden from having an abortion.
Yep.
Jesus.
That has to be unconstitutional, doesn't it?
Well, you'd kind of like to think so, Andrew, but Mike Pence, the weirdo governor there, says, well, we put in a clause about the life of the mother, only they don't talk like that in Talibandiana. And so it may pass constitutional scrutiny. And it's also worth remembering, if y'all recall that clip that I played that Beth provided to me from Real Clear Politics, you may recall that back in September of last year, Hillary Clinton said that she could compromise on a woman's right to choose in the case of what was referred to as late-term or partial birth abortion if Republicans would put an exception for the life of the mother in it. So, in a way, what Talibandiana did is they took Senator Clinton at her word. And so this lethal fetal anomaly bill that he signed into law last week takes away a woman's right to choose, even when her baby is going to die inside her, but does say, well, you know, if it'll end the life of the mother, I guess we're just going to have to talk, you know, well, I guess we'll have to have her let an abortion, have an abortion. God damn it.
I would think, Bob, that in almost every case, if a baby dies inside of the mother and dies, you know, let's say, you know, after a certain amount of time, there's going to be some toxicity developing in her system.
Yes.
And she's going to die.
Yes. Yes.
Now, something else that's included in this bill is even if there's other fetal anomalies, if there's Down syndrome, if there's other types of genetic defects, an abortion cannot be performed. So if there are genetic defects that are going to cause dramatic burdens on the mother or the family, an abortion cannot be an option in the case. neural tube deformities, things where the fetus may not survive very long after birth, anything of that nature, there's no option for abortion. So even if it's not before delivery, even if it's post-delivery, there's no option for to terminate the pregnancy. So
I mean, this is monstrous.
It is. It's horrible, and that's what I was saying. In my case, I would have been forced to carry the the pregnancy until it either terminated on its own or full term. And I was on severely cytotoxic drugs at the time, and so I was carrying a very deformed fetus, and it would have been pure hell, and it was putting my life at jeopardy.
But wait, Jules. I mean,
if this had been very difficult.
If this had happened, if this law had been in effect when you were going through that, I mean, you would have been free to say, go to one of those baby-hating states like New York or Massachusetts or California, right?
Yeah, well, that's
so. They didn't really take away your right to an abortion. I mean, they just took away your right to an abortion in Talibandiana, because Jesus.
Yeah.
I got a question. Does this law contain a provision whereby the state of Indiana is going to pay for the child rearing and child care for these?
No, somehow
babies that are born with defects and so forth.
No, somehow they never get around to drafting those.
Damn! What the hell?
I mean, they just run out of time. They hear their mothers calling them or something. Because you know we value life
until it's born. Then it doesn't have a value.
Yeah, well, yeah. Then sucker, you're on your own.
Right. Pull yourself up by your bootstraps. Right.
Right. And but here's the fun part. This Indiana law doesn't just do what Jules has described. It also says that them heathen vagina people can't get no abortion if the only reason they want it is because of the gender of the baby or the race. Because, you know, that's what women are out there all the time doing. They're saying, yeah, I'm gonna abort this baby because of its race, or I want a little girl, not a little boy, or I want a little boy.
Sounds like that was passed by the Chinese legislature, because they have a problem with that, like more of the sex selection, you know, because they want to always have sons instead of daughters in the rural parts, you know.
Yeah.
So they've had a problem for many years with infanticide of baby girls.
Well, that was that one child rule.
Yeah, but also the idea in a lot of Asian cultures is you want to, you know, have your children take care of you as you get older, and for some reason they that was part of the one child rule. You're right, Sparky, but yeah. And they always wanted to have boys, not girls. So.
And see, I don't want to get too personal about all of this, and I hope Agnes will not mind me saying this. Agnes has direct experience with something like this. She had a doctor once who was pro-life.
Oh, God.
And she was carrying twins. And the doctor didn't tell her that one of the twins was dead inside of her and had been.
Mm-hmm.
And never told her that she had options.
Wow. That's like malpractice, Bob, to say the least.
You would think, but no, it wasn't.
Hmm. Wow. Did it affect the other child?
The baby that died in the womb was normal.
Okay, but the baby that was born was okay, though. It wasn't affected by the dead baby next to it?
No, it was horribly, horribly, horribly birth defected.
Oh, jeez.
It only lived for hours.
Ah.
That is shameful. Mm. That doctor should, that should be reported. I mean, that is absolutely shameful.
And he went on to, as far as I know, he's still got a career out there butchering women.
Jeez. Bob, there used to be a cause of action called wrongful life. I don't know if that's ever been actually allowed, but you know, where, let's say,
it's been debated a lot, but most jurisdictions reject it.
Yeah.
I think, frankly, it's hard to look at it and not see that the reasons for rejecting it are, you know, as usual, grounded in fucking religion.
Yeah, exactly. I think a lot of times the courts will actually reject that cause of action, typically, you know, based on their, you know, precedent or their interpretation of precedent or who knows what, you know?
Yeah. It's hard to say that there's a happy side to this story out of Talibandiana, but it has spawned, if I may use that word, a really, really vigorous and, dare we say, lighthearted campaign against the governor of Talibandiana, Mike Pence. A group of anonymous women have founded an organization called Periods for Pence. So the women who are participating in Periods for Pence are just calling the governor's office every so often to leave a message for him, telling him how their periods are going. one woman called the governor's office and said, "Good morning. I just wanted to inform the governor that things seem to be drying up today. No babies seem to be up in there, okay?" And when the staffer, poor stupid staffer, said, "And your name?" She said, "My name is Sue. My last name is Magina. That's Magina. It rhymes with..." And then click, get it, Sue Magina. Another woman said, "I need to get a message to the governor that I'm on day 3 of my period. My flow seems abnormally heavy, but my cramps are much better to click." Ma'am, what is it that I can help you with?" The staffer in the governor's office said. And she's, "Oh, I don't need your help. I just wanted to keep Governor Pence informed of my reproductive cycle since he seems so concerned." They've gotten 4,000 likes on their Facebook page, Periods for Pence.
Oh, God.
And men have even taken to calling Governor Pence's office to describe their partner's menstrual cycles, because it appears to be between the Homer sectionals and the vagina people, it's about the only thing that these goddamn Republicans in Indiana are interested in. Or do I have it wrong, Jules?
No, you're right. The sad part is about 2 weeks prior to this, Pence signed in a bill that took us down to 4 abortion clinics in the state of Indiana. This is the second bill in within a month's period, a second anti-abortion bill within a month's period, a month's time frame that we've had him sign into law. So it's been a real tough fight for, and you have to realize, I worked for Planned Parenthood for a period of time in the 90s. I worked with Planned Parenthood as director of religious ed when I was with the UU. And this has been a tough battle for folks in this state who have been fighting for abortion rights. And it's just, you just want to beat your head up against the wall sometimes.
Well, you've got an ally out there in the marvelously coherent Diane in Kansas. Stan, she says, subject line: chain of culpability. this whole issue is beyond my patience. But I will ask questions about how far culpability goes, just to see how far the fascists are willing to go. Would the husband or boyfriend who helps the woman get to a clinic go to jail? Would that, well, that's called accessory before the fact, and so that would be treated as the same felony, presumably. Would the counselor who provides therapy sessions for the woman go to jail? Would his or her patient records be confiscated? If a parent helps with financing the abortion or with logistics, is he or she in legal trouble? Would the lawyer who gives advice to the woman be in trouble because the freaks go after client privilege? I just want to know how far these freaks will go into the woman's network before people just get carted away for any involvement or knowledge at all. Obviously, it is the woman's right to make the choice, but often it is not made in a vacuum. Will the Gestapo eventually go after everyone involved or implicated? That freak pastor in California would, I bet, and I bet you're right.
I think they would go after everybody, Bob. They're going to throw everybody in jail. You know? That's how they roll, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
I was also going to mention, Bob, apparently I looked at Wikipedia, and apparently the state of California is one of four U.S. states that does allow a child who has birth defects and whose life was brought about, you know, through negligence in terms of the medical personnel failed to advise the parents of birth defects. They can sue for special damages, not pain and suffering, but I guess that would be the additional costs that it, you know, entails.
They go with caregiving. Sure.
Right, with caregiving. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, you know, if you all need to move to California, well, actually, we have enough people, but...
Yeah, right. See, that's the problem. Some of us have to stand and fight where we are, no matter how much we would like to just, you know, get up in the morning and be able to go out and see the... You know, the snow cap on Mount Lassen, for instance, or Mount Shasta.
Yeah, we still got lots of room up here.
Yeah, but not that much water.
Well, at least you don't have to go live. Did you see the story of the person that's living in a box and in somebody's house in San Francisco?
Yeah.
It's like 32 square feet or something like that, isn't it? I mean,
it's a plywood box that they built off the corner up against the wall. It's got a bed in it.
And they're paying $1,200 a month for it?
No, it was like $400 a month or something.
Wow, that's a bargain.
That much?
$300, I thought. But, you know, it looks larger than it probably is. They probably used a wide-angle lens shooting from the inside of the structure. You know, because it looks like there's a little bit of room there. You know, they have like a place for their clothes and, you know, the couch, you know, the bed folds back into a couch and, you know, things like that, you know. But
speaking of people moving around, I just found out two lesbians moved in one door down from me last week or so, too. I just found out last weekend.
Oddly enough, you haven't had a volcano yet.
No.
Well, just don't piss them off. Don't piss them off because we know that from religious leaders around the world that lesbians and gay men are responsible for everything from tornadoes to hurricanes to volcanoes to earthquakes.
Well, that's what happened with Hurricane Katrina. It's been documented. The gay pride parade in New Orleans caused Hurricane Katrina. You all know that.
Yeah, right. What was that, Andrew?
I was saying, just ask Pat Robertson.
Oh, absolutely. And see, Pat Robertson, Andrew, is even confused. He said, on this whole how shall we punish the slutty women issue, He was left in a quandary, just like the rest of the right wing are. He said, "How could you? What kind of punishment would you have?" But I mean, this has created a real mess. And of course,
wow.
It's got to sound silly to you, Andrew, and to all our friends in other saner corners.
I was actually going to say that it is amazing. Like, in this country, I don't even remember. I mean, I'm not, you know, I'm only about 30, but from what I know about Australian politics, even back to, you know, the early 80s, abortion wasn't an issue. And it's amazing how much it's become a bigger and bigger issue in America, where here, if there was any, like, federal MP that really said anything about restricting abortion rights, no one would elect them. Like, I don't hear it. No politician says anything about abortion.
No, I think you've had a couple of bizarre right-wingers crop up every now and then. And
we have some minority senators who, like, there's one from, they usually just have one MP and they're usually in the Senate. But there's usually a couple always. But any mainstream politician, it's just never really been an issue for decades.
Right, because the rest of the country looks at him and goes, shut up, right?
People get laughed out of town.
So how come if the rest of the world, not all of them, but Europe and Australia can be so sane, in a lot of ways, how come we have to endure the crazy people?
We have Christians.
Well, no, it's not that we have Christians. It's that we have a particularly virulent brand. I think R2-D2 has entered the conversation.
No, look, it's the lady cab driver.
Oh, okay.
Oh, it's Tracy.
No, there's a particularly virulent brand of Calvinism and Puritanism that remains that has poisoned this country from its very beginning, because part of this country was founded by religious extremists.
Australia's never had a history of this intense religion crossing into government.
No, you had Australia was settled by colonialist British and people that. That they didn't like. What? You owe money? Well, off to Australia with you, bastard. That's how it works out, isn't it, Andrew?
Yeah, that's right. And I just want to ask, like, it's just amazing that it's going, the reproductive rights in 2016 in America are going backwards. So what future is there? What do you see happening? Is this going to get worse? Is it going to get better? I think the only thing that can happen is just to get rid of these Republicans in each state, because this is where it's coming from. The individual states run by these Republicans.
We are.
Well, you know, even in the states like California, where we have a minority of Republicans, the Republicans here are just as nutty as the Republicans. Everywhere else.
I mean, our...
Yeah,
last,
come up where I live.
Well, the last...
I think it is... you know what? I think it is depending on what part of California you live in. I really do.
Yeah,
I think
really are at least a couple of Californias.
Oh, yeah. But I think it's the more rural the area, or... like where I was the other day when I was in Norco, I got to hear Tea Party people talk. It was in Rivera County, which is, you know, very white and very conservative. And yeah. So like where I live, even in Sherman Oaks, I know there are Republicans there, but not to that extreme. But it's still that there are people like that in California.
What about, Orange County used to have the most virulent strand of people from the John Birch Society in it, but they tend to be, in the wealthier areas, they tend to be better educated, but they're still Republicans.
Right.
Are they still just as loony as, well, I guess they are, you know, all Republicans in this.
Yes, I know.
are crazy.
Hey, where was what's his name, Duke Majan from? Because I know that Pete Wilson was from San Diego and he was pro-choice. And where was Duke Majan from? Because he was pro-choice too, as well as Arnold. And they were governors.
Well, but see, a California governor, a California Republican can't get elected governor with a platform like, say, that of Mike Pence in Tallahassee. Because in order to become a governor of California, you've got to have Democrats vote for you.
Yeah, that's true.
Now, back in the day of Pete Wilson.
Huh? Pete Wilson's from San Diego.
Yeah, I know, but he's the rottenest governor we've ever had.
One of the things that my senator, Nick Petras, before we had term limits, Nick Petras was the long-term senator for Berkeley and Oakland. And he looked at me, or he didn't speak to me particularly, but he spoke to a group of people, a group of Democrats, and he said, you know, Pete Wilson knows every argument. He knows how to argue every point. He understands all the issues. He's very smart. He's no dummy, but he continues to vote Republican, even when he knows better and even when he's fully informed on the issues. So please explain that to me.
Well,
tough call.
Well, it's like the conversation that we had yesterday about the woman in Alaska, who the superdelegate. You know, here's the majority of Alaskans wanted caucus for Bernie Sanders. And she's basically saying, I don't care what you want. I'm going to do what I want. And that just people are going to do what they want to do, regardless of where, even though, you know, it shows better out that the majority of people want this, vote this way. But it's like, nope, I want to vote for my own self-interest, even if you're going to be overruled. So there you go.
Well, I mean, look, in Minnesota, in Minnesota, Senator Al Franken has promised up and down that he will vote for Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton. And no matter the fact that Minnesota went for Bernie by a wide margin, he's not coming off of it. And, you know, that's a larger problem. I want to go back for a minute, though, to the question that Andrew raised, because it is a serious question. And that is, you know, how do we ever go forward? And it begs people who live in reality world, Andrew, to at least acknowledge the fact that we may not. This may be, I mean, this may be the long, slow slide toward permanent night in the United States.
That's very sad.
Because we can't seem to do anything. We can't seem to do anything about campaign finance reform, which is part and parcel, primarily, of how these right wing organizations took control of the state governments. And you're absolutely right. Whether it's environmental issues, women's reproductive health issues, financial issues relating to poverty and health care, it is Republican dominated state governments that are making this country into a hellish little nightmare. And unless we figure out some way to check it, we're done, Andrew.
Yeah, there definitely seems to be something even worse than a paralysis. It's some going, you know, degradation with specific issues, which is very sad to see.
No, we want, what was being said earlier about California is true. You know, you want to find a conservative pocket of California, find a place where there are lots of churches and the churches control the community. That place will be a right-wing shithole.
Yeah, I wanted to say to Andrew and Bob that I'm concerned about the very same thing that Bob was just talking about, that we're in the long, slow slide back into a new dark ages. And I feel fear about it. But, you know, Devin tells me all the time that I shouldn't be frightened, that fear is the worst thing, because fear will kill my ass.
Yeah, fear is, you know, the mind killer. Fear is the mind killer, Larry.
Yeah, that's what he was saying. Well, I'm beginning to feel it, and it's not fun. So, anyway, I was just wondering earlier, we were talking about the abortion issue, and I'm just wondering, by talking about all these crazy people, are we just basically fueling, can we just sort of ignore the fact that these people are out there doing these crazy things? Because every time I hear about these crazy people with their crazy laws and their crazy attitudes, and the less I hear sane people out there talking about, you know, liberal or radical politics, I don't know whether it's healthy for me to have to hear these crazy idiots.
Well, unfortunately, the only way you can know how much danger you're in is to know what the monsters are saying, and in the case, you know, we're talking about abortion, women's reproductive health issues. In that particular instance, T. Rump has actually done a service to the country, I think, of sorts, because he has engendered a conversation. And what we're finding is that there are a lot of white-wing, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual Christians who are more than happy to get their lynching on. Andrew, you mentioned Pat Robertson. Okay, I got Pat Robertson. Check this out.
You know, it's interesting what Trump says. It shocks people, but at the same time, the old adage was that abortion was illegal, that it was murder. And consequently, if it's illegal and it's murder, then there had to be some penalty attached to it. That's why it was so very, very hard to get any kind of legislation against this sort of thing. And now they say, well, it should punish the provider who does the abortion, not the woman who's having it, which sounds more reasonable. But in any event, if somebody says abortion is murder, then what do you do to somebody who commits murder? I mean, so it's a dilemma.
You know, get a rope.
That people have been wrestling with, and I'm certainly not going to get into it, but that does seem a bit draconian. But at the same time, we've slaughtered close to 50 million unborn babies in America since Roe versus Wade. It's been a slaughter that is unprecedented.
Can you imagine? I mean, that's since Roe versus Wade in 1973. The reason Pat Robertson gets so upset about that is, can you begin to imagine how much money those 50 million babies could have given him?
Yeah.
I mean, they always haul out, well, that might have been the baby that cured cancer. And they never haul out, well, that might have been the next fucking Hitler.
Well, that topic actually came up during the GOP debates early on, you know?
Yeah, because Jeb Bush would kill baby Hitler.
Right, right. Try to show how tough he was. You know?
What bothers me about, you know, like people like Pat Robertson can talk about, you know, these 50 million babies that, you know, should have been born and all that. What about when those 50 million babies that had been born, and many of them born poor, black, Latino, or what have you, where would the funding have come from to take care of them?
Well, that's the whole thing. They're hateful hypocrites. They always were. And they're a bunch of hateful, fear-mongering, crazy sociopaths. And so that's the whole issue with those people.
Well, they're just, you know, I just, first of all, I wanted to say to Bob that Mercedes got a big chuckle out of you when you were mentioning homosexuals. She said, Bob's really funny. And I said, yes, he is. So I want to give you that compliment.
Oh, thank you, Larry. Hi, Mercedes.
I'm Mercedes. She's really out here. She's trying to take care of me, make sure I get my stuff taken care of. But yeah, you're right. The thing is that these people are crazy and they're lunatics and they're running the and they're running the country.
Well, they have the power.
And
they live in a state of permanent cognitive dissonance. Okay, they hate homosexuals, who seldom, if ever, have abortions.
That's right. And but, you know, and you know, they, and, you know, I live in,
but I, but you see, but, craziness, you see, right?
but you see, I live in Berkeley and Oakland, and I'm around all kinds of people, and I don't see any of these problems these people are talking about. They're just making some kind of semantic difference that has no basis in reality, but yet a whole bunch of people believe it just because somebody says it. So it's like, you know, I mean, it's crazy. I mean, I went to a Bernie organizing meeting earlier this week, so I'm probably going to start calling for him. But I told them, I said, you know, even if Bernie doesn't get elected, and you know that his message has to stay out there, because I can't see anybody else at this time that I really can sensibly vote for but Bernie. I mean, I know the realities of practical politics, but so
guess what, everybody? I just got in the mail today my Bernie for President 2016 union-made shirt from the Bernie for President website.
Yay. Ooh. Have you gotten your Bernie Sanders sticker yet?
Well, I didn't get the Bernie Sanders sticker because I ordered that before the Bernie Sanders sticker came in. But
I got
you. My vow, check this out. My vow is I'm going to wear, you know, I live in Arizona, Stan, and you know how horrible things are in Arizona, Stan, right? So I'm pledging I'm going to wear my Bernie for President t-shirt every Saturday and Sunday, every weekend from now until November 8th. And if somebody wants to argue with me, I'm taking my life into my own hands by doing that in a way. And I'm not being paranoid because people here are very free to fly the flag, the don't tread on me flag, the very redneck, conservative, racist down here. And I am, you know, I am not going to allow that to not, you know, to stop me. But I have to say, I am nervous, you know?
Yeah. Well, look at the bright side, Alex. Most of the snowbirds from down there are going to be leaving in May.
Yeah. Well,
I know. It's the natives, you know.
Well,
Alex,
get a gun.
Oh, I'm going to wear that shirt around Arizona. Okay. Yeah. Pack your pink pistol, you'll be fine. Freedom protect yourself.
Now, since Alex is here, I wanted to ask Alex, is Bernie going to sue the party in Arizona? They just enfranchised a whole lot of Democratic voters after that, whatever they call a primary.
The only thing I know is I did the vote by early mail. So I voted 3 weeks before the primary here for Bernie. And then this whole thing happened. And I don't even know. They say that even people's voting mail-in ballots might have been tampered with. But I think it's reached the Department of Justice, Bob. I mean, I think they really are doing something about this now or of some sort.
I'm not entirely certain. I've seen the videos of the hearings, and people were pissed. But I haven't seen anything about the Department of Justice taking action. Maybe they're looking at it. But remember, John Roberts and you know the rats gutted the Voting Rights Act, which would have prevented all of this. Because there would have had to have been pre-clearance for going from 200 polling places to 60.
60, yeah, Jesus.
Meanwhile,
60 polling places throughout the whole state?
No. This was just in Phoenix, Maricopa County.
Oh, well, is that where that the stupid ass sheriff is?
Yeah.
Yes, that's where I live.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah. Meanwhile, just backing up to a comment from Arthur in the chat room, I like to share as many offerings of ideas as I possibly can. In the chat room, Arthur says, Rachel Maddow did a great piece on how obviously pro-life people do want to imprison women for abortions. That's an obvious consequence of the prohibition. It's just not politically prudent to say so in public anymore. But that's the whole thing, Arthur. it has suddenly gotten okay to say. I mean, here's Theodore Chabot. Sluts who have abortions should be put to death. Okay, so these guys are deemed the extremist fringe. But you know what the extremist fringe becomes? The mainstream.
The new normal.
The new damn normal. Exactly. Oh, and let me just say, it's 10 minutes past the hour. We got about 50 minutes left in the program, and I want to thank Jay out either north of the border or south of the border, north of the border in Arizona or south of the border in Mexico. I wanted to thank Jay for jumping in. That would leave us with about $75 to go in fundraising for this evening. Thank you. And you know what? That equates nicely with the challenge that you, Tim, put on the table last night.
Oh, I did? Oh, I don't know. Oh, yeah, I guess.
Bob, I'd like
you,
to ask.
You mean you didn't?
I did, but the challenge.
You're taking back your challenge now, Tim?
No, I'm just ecstatic right now.
I may be grasping at straws here, but you know, I take medicine for depression and all kinds of things because of my mental states and all that kind of stuff. But can't they prescribe a whole bunch, or couldn't all these Republicans and Congress people go to a doctor and get some kind of medicine or something, medicine to
no,
get
no, we just need to put it in the water, get, Larry.
You know, say, I mean, I know I'm being silly and stupid.
No,
but,
we just need to put it in the water.
Because you know, I mean, these people...
Larry, you know what the concept of noncompliance is. I'm sure Alex does in her business. What you've got in the American right wing are a whole bunch of mentally ill, noncompliant patients. Okay? So, you know, one of the great challenges of the mental health science is to figure out a way to get people, you know, like, say, people who suffer from schizoaffective disorder or whatever, you know, they'll feel fine, and because they feel fine, they quit taking their meds, and the next thing you know, they're talking to buildings again. And so you got to figure out a way to kind of keep them on their meds. The American right wing is like that. They don't want to get well. They don't want to be decent human beings. They don't want to not hate people, because hate is all they have, Larry. It's all they've got. If they had to live in a world where they just, you know, liked people, well, shit, what's the point of being here?
That doesn't make any sense at all.
I know this is supposed to be a comedy program.
I know that we're supposed to be lighthearted here, but...
I'm not being lighthearted.
Okay.
I'm deadly in earnest.
Okay.
Take a Sunday and pick a church. You know, Baptist, Pentecostal, some Methodists,
Unitarian Universalists.
No.
don't make fun of Unitarian Universalists. That's Tibby. That's our church.
And you know what? If you make fun of the Unitarians, Larry will come and burn a question mark in your yard.
Bob, I got to tell you about religion. I was in the hospital yesterday for observation, and I was talking to some Jews who were asking me all kinds of questions. Am I Jewish? Am I this? You know, all that. They were Orthodox Jews. So, you know, I mean, if you have to deal with Orthodox Jews, they're just nuts. You know, but you know what I'm saying. Anyway.
Right, because fundamentalists are fundamentalists are fundamentalists are fundamentalists.
Yeah. So, okay.
Hey, Bob. Okay. Good news, by the way. I just want to share this with everyone. And I have a plan to do something about it. You know, we were talking about abortions and the woman's right to choose, yada yada, and so on and so forth. Well, I just found out right now, after surfing the Facebook,
And I checked it with the LA Times just to make sure it's not an April Fool's gag. So at the LA Times, I wrote, there's a story that reads, birth control pills without prescription coming soon to California under new law this month.
Good. You know, good.
Without prescription?
So what I was saying, I need someone's advice. If it's banned in other states, and I want to mail it to friends, can I get in trouble for that?
Probably. Well, it depends.
It depends on the, you know, Controlled Substances Acts. Rick, jump in here if I start screwing up. Have schedules, and so the distribution of a controlled substance is dependent upon which schedule it's on. I'm sure, for instance,
Hormones? I don't think hormones. Oh, sorry. I don't think hormones are considered a. I think the whole thing is.
Since they're baby killing hormones, they should probably be on Schedule One up there with marijuana and heroin and meth.
Are birth control pills Schedule One?
No, I'm saying that the right wing would probably like to have them be that way.
But yeah. I think that if it's hormones, and I think the big thing is, as far as birth control crossing state lines, I can't believe I just said that, is that it's not your, if it's not your prescription, then it's not, legally, a good idea. You know, you're never supposed to take other people's prescriptions, but I don't think there's any kind of
legal. Right. And the classic example of that, Alex, is, had Rush Limbaugh not been, you know, Rush Limbaugh, he would have been busted down to the ground for taking a Viagra prescription in someone else's name to the Dominican Republic on an all-boys weekend.
I don't see how
But it's not my prescription, though.
Jules?
You're not going to get no one's going to get arrested. Nothing terrible is going to happen if you send a birth control from California to somebody else somewhere else. I mean, I wouldn't worry about that at all.
Well, don't
say Jules, but Jules was trying to say something.
I'm not sure how they could make it over the counter. I really don't, because there's so many different formulas and each woman is kind of formula, so to speak. some women do better on certain types of birth control pills.
That's true.
And it just to walk in and pick a formula is not really recommended. And
yeah,
some should not be on birth control pills. So I don't.
I think it can still be over the counter, but you have to talk to a pharmacist.
Because
in Australia we have over the counter drugs where. I mean, technically it's over the counter, but to get it, you have to talk to the pharmacist, and he'll give you a spiel about it, and then give it to you.
Well, I mean, down there, can't you get an aspirin with some codeine in it over the counter?
All right, so this is actually new stuff. We've had codeine completely over the counter for quite a long time. And just very recently, because of, you know, a spate of people getting addicted to it, we're now getting to the point where I think within about 6 months, it will either be prescription only or a higher level where you have to talk to the pharmacist before and maybe, like, because with our pseudoephedrine, you have to go to the pharmacist and put your name and they scan your license before you buy anything with pseudoephedrine, so they're thinking they may do that with codeine.
Yeah, when I went to London, I was all excited because I actually could get Tylenol with codeine over the counter. I'm like, what? That was awesome.
What is this about the Sudafed that you cannot get some kind of Sudafeds or Tylenol or something without having
it's used in making meth.
Yeah, you got to limit Sudafed purchases, otherwise hillbillies will buy a bunch of it and go rent a motel room and make meth in the bathtub. They'll make a big meth in the bathtub.
Yeah, but you can buy that stuff that dude blew his leg off with very easily.
Tannerite, absolutely.
Jeez,
I buy that here.
Right, because freedom.
Well, I guess
so. You were saying about the Republican right wing. They're just we've already agreed that they're non-compliant. That they're not taking, that they ought to be on medicine or doing something, but they're not taking their medicine. And that's why they're nuts or something. I don't know.
I really think they're mentally ill, Larry. I think that there is a large swath of humans, and I'll talk about Americans, but I'm sure they're all over I know they're all over the world, that are innately mean-spirited and nasty motherfuckers. So I'm not going to give them the excuse of mental illness at all. I'm not going to do it.
Yeah, that is a deeply technical medical term, mean-spirited motherfuckers.
That's right.
Yeah, you know, support all the time.
You know who came out in the last week is going to donate his brain to science after he dies?
Who?
Dale Earnhardt Jr. because of the concussion thing.
Oh, okay. Well, that...
He had a news conference just today where all the press was asking about him. He said he was always going to be an organ donor, and he says everything is to any use if I, you know, you can have. But
hail NASCAR,
he came out to say normal people, I mean regular people, need to donate their brains too, so they can study them for medical science.
So I don't understand something, Dunk. So
it's the concussion disease, the NFL, you know,
the CTE,
okay. CTE
thing. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. The reason why I don't understand is that Dale Earnhardt didn't play football. He was a race car driver.
He had two concussions in 2012 that knocked him out. He couldn't participate in the end of the season races.
So for the good of NASCAR, for the NASCAR gods, he's going to be a martyr and a savior to find out about the brain problems. Isn't that lovely?
No, Alex.
I don't think that's it.
That's hard.
I really think maybe because, well, like with all the football players that are going, you know, batshit crazy because of concussions, they're even claiming that the reason why O.J. Simpson is the way he was is because of the traumatic brain injuries and stuff like that. I don't think it's because of that. I mean, I think maybe, as shocking as it may seem, he's trying to figure, you know, make sure people can study why this happens,
right,
and hopefully prevent it in the future.
Exactly, Tracy, because the background on this, I mean, it's very easy to say, oh, you know, football bullshit, you know, whatever. And you know, I'm not calling you out, Alex, but this is a very real thing. For instance, when you've got a multi-billion-dollar corporation like the NFL, as they were found to have done, deliberately skewing head injury study results, then the more people who have been prone to head injuries, whose brains can be studied, the better we can understand it. I mean, one classic story that comes to mind is Ernest Hemingway. The man had head injuries all his life, and at the end of his life, he was beset by paranoia. He thought the FBI was watching him. And so they put him, he became suicidal, they put him through electroshock therapy, all of this stuff. And then it turns out they got his FBI file, and son of a bitch, the FBI was following him and was surveilling him.
Oh.
But, I mean, he lived through plane crashes, and God knows he pickled it. They wouldn't even have had to put his brain in a jar. He pre-pickled it for him.
Yeah,
but no. This is important research that needs to be done.
Bob, what?
Yeah, I was just dissing on the NASCAR thing. Sorry, y'all.
No, no, yeah, that's a reasonable diss, yeah. Actually. So.
So Bob, while we've gotten on the concussion thing, not that I want to be a hypochondriac, even though everybody knows I am. On August 4th, 1983, I fell off of an AC Transit bus in Hayward and hit my head, and ultimately had some, you know, but they didn't, and I went unconscious, and I was in the hospital, but they didn't test me for a concussion, but I think I might have had one. But what Carol was telling me, you know, Carol from Australia, was that unless I have nausea afterward or something, that I probably didn't have a concussion, but they didn't check me. But I've only had, you know, and I've fallen before out of, you know, when I was younger, but, you know, I don't know if there's something I need to worry about, or if they can check something, or do you know anything about that? I've seemed to be okay.
Now.
I think, as I told you, Larry, my wife has had ex, soon, not yet ex, but soon to be ex. She's had concussions before, and she never got nauseous. She'd like bang her head against the wall when she, you know, because there was no headboard on the bed when she was watching TV. She was very accident prone. And, you know, she kind of saw stars once or twice. But, you know, she never vomited. So I don't think that's a prerequisite to have a concussion, vomiting.
No.
The research out there more and more is, it touches on things that are sacred, secularly speaking, to this country, to wit, football. I mean, all over the country, the great Midwest, the deep South, you know, proud papas.
Texas. Put their,
Texas. Oh, hell yes. Proud papas and mamas put their children in midget league football, and they're helmeted and they're suited. And we found out that, you know, one head injury can screw your life. It can, yeah. Or if not screw it, can have profound impacts, you know, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years down the road.
Although I think, you know, I think, Bob, the bigger problem are the micro shocks that, you know, like the linemen get, like play after play after play, like, you know, multiple shocks, which together can be a big deal. And, okay. you know, and if you have multiple concussions, you know, that can actually really hurt you badly as well.
Well, a classic case is Kenny the Snake Stabler.
Alex Webster, the center for Terry Bradshaw.
Yeah, but Stabler lived this, you know, wild, you know, heroic lifestyle. But by the time he was on the way to death, he had been reduced to a shadow of his former self, and he donated his brain to science. And they looked at it and said, "Oh my God."
Why can't they, you know, I know people love football, but why can't they ban boxing? Why can't they ban football? Anything that has to do with you getting your head knocked around.
Well, because liberty, because freedom. Although, let me ask, hey, Andrew, down in Oz, yes. Do you follow Australian rules football or footy or any, do you follow anybody?
Unfortunately, I really don't follow any sport.
Well, I was only asking because I wonder if the head injury, I wonder if the head injury percentages or likelihoods are equal in something, because, you know, Australian rules football can be pretty brutal, and, you know, rugby. But again, there are some people out there who say that it's the helmet that's the problem. Because it leads people to use their heads as weapons.
I can say that definitely it's not an issue at all with AFL, but with NRL and rugby, I don't know. There really hasn't been any talk about it. So whatever the reason is, it hasn't been really brought up as an issue here.
Perhaps,
so whether that means they're actually not getting hurt or whatever, I'm not sure.
Right.
I like the idea about the helmets, because you're hitting your head up against something else. On top of you got the helmet that's supposed to be protecting your head, but you get hit the ground, your head hits the helmet, and then you hit the ground, and that's just how many times is your head being hit at that point?
Right, and somebody mentioned linemen a minute ago. For years, we've known, it's actually kind of a contradiction. You know, at the combines, they give out this intelligence test to potential NFL draftees. It's called the Wunderlich test. And on average, it's the linemen who score the highest intelligence of all the players.
Yes.
And at the same time, the linemen tend to be the least well-paid and also have the earliest mortality rates. And it's for a variety of reasons, but, you know, the constant head contact has got to be a part of it.
Well, what the football player 4 years ago, Junior
Seau.
I believe his family donated his brain to science because they figured the reason why he was the way he was, and I think he even spoke up about it at some point, that all these issues that he was having was because of traumatic brain injuries.
Yeah, he was convinced he had it, and in fact, I think he did have CTE once he was dissected, so to speak, you know, his brain.
So they can actually.
If you haven't seen the movie Concussion, you watch it.
I wonder if I could sit through it without. Yeah. I wonder if I could sit through it. Well,
there's a lot of young football players coming out. Well, a lot, but a couple recently have said, "I'm leaving the game because I don't want this to happen to me." Have you heard about a couple of these guys?
The 49ers.
Yeah, one guy was on the 49ers last year. Quit after one season.
Yeah, and then there was a college quarterback, I think, out of West Virginia, Bob, who decided not to go pro. He decided to retire. He could have gone pro. You remember him?
Oh, I can't remember his name. Yeah, but yeah. Well, no, it's not that he decided not to. That wasn't that long back. He couldn't. I mean, they just flat told. I mean, he lost. He was out for the season, and he lost his career.
Hmm. Yeah.
Well.
Yeah.
And then what happens to these? Because I think isn't there a big push against the NHL? What is it? NFL? Who with these players' unions? They're like, look, you know, you guys know what's going on, and I think that was one of the premises of Concussion, that they knew what was going on, but why not do anything? Because money, and so now these players are trying to figure out, you know, are suing the NFL because it's like, well, now you got to take care of us.
Well, according, I mean, I'm hard on the New York Times, but according to the New York Times investigative piece, which they did a good job on, it's not just that the NFL knowingly let it happen; it's that they actively covered up the damn data and fudged the data and made the reports say something the reports didn't say.
Oh, God. Oh.
You know, again, as Tracy notes, because money.
You know, in that respect, the NFL is a lot like the Tobacco Institute was, you know, that, hey, nothing can go wrong here if you smoke. I mean, look, doctors recommend it for the health of their patients. You know, it's good for you.
Four out of every whatever doctors smoke whatever.
Tarrington, or maybe right. Marlboro, or what? Yeah.
I think it was Tarrington, actually, Bob.
Well, it's got activated charcoal micronite filters.
Oh, well, speaking of why, because money, I was just listening to a show this morning on KPFK about group is about vaccination safety. And it's not that they're anti-vaccinations. No, they're just kind of peeved that, well, because they're using mercury in the vaccinations. And some kids are getting sick. And that the CDC knew about this, of course, and why did they not do anything? What? Because, you know, money. Because they said that mercury...
The thimerosal, that's the thimerosal debate. And that is a really, really, really open question.
Well, I look at it this way. I've never been... I've been fortunate. I don't know anyone who has gotten sick because of vaccines. But I do, you know... There are people who have reactions, and that's what I'm just wondering. It's like, well, what happens to the people who have reactions? And I'm not even talking about the autism argument. I'm just talking about the kids who get out and out sick.
I was one of those kids.
Oh, seriously?
Yeah, I was maybe a year old and had been sickly as a child. And I was taken for, it was my whooping cough vaccine. And they gave it to you in your leg, in your thigh, the meat of your thigh. And they gave it to me, my leg swelled up, and I was paralyzed for 3 days.
Jesus. But it went away.
Yeah, it went away.
Obviously.
It went away. But not before my father had informed the pediatrician that he was more than willing to hang for killing him if anything happened to his little boy.
Oh, your dad was an OG. He's like, I will take you out.
Hillbilly.
Oh, you know,
somebody from the Outsiders, Bob.
I remember
the first vaccination we got in the military. We were standing in line, and a guy goes through this big old long spiel and says, "Is anybody allergic to chicken eggs?" I'll never forget that. Step out of line, and then we process through. We call the vaccinators Bloody Marys. Because they use air injection guns to vaccinate, and you get shots in both arms as you walk through. You roll up your sleeves, and then once you come out of the vaccination clinic, it was smoke them if you got them, and until everybody got formed up, and then we marched back to the barracks, and we did that like once a week. It seemed like. And then you got the little international shot card that you got all your vaccinations in because you were going to go somewhere in the world you'd need it.
Oh, by the way, GK up in Minnesota tells me Robert Smith, running back of the Minnesota Vikings, left early. He was afraid of head injuries, too.
How you doing, Kim? I just want to say hi to Kim. Kim Glorner. Anyway, the concussion thing really is scary to me now. Well, a lot of things are scary, so anyway.
Agnes Viking Warrior Princess tells me it was my DPT, my diphtheria pertussis and tetanus.
By the way, please say hello to Agnes. I appreciate it.
Okay.
I had to get one of them tetanus shot upgrades just last time I went to the doctor, too. Hurt like hell. Later.
Oh, yeah. As a child, I was a medical anomaly. I was one of those kids who got the measles vaccine that didn't take.
Oh, jeez.
So, second grade was a rough year. I got chicken pox, measles, and mumps all within about 6 weeks of each other.
I got the mumps, and that was because it was prior to the mumps vaccine.
Right.
So I got
the
mumps. Yeah. It was horrible. But you got the vaccine, Bob, and you still got it?
No. I got the measles vaccine, and I still got measles. Oh.
So they didn't have the mumps vaccine when you were little, huh?
Oh, no.
I'm older than you. I was just wondering when they came out with that.
I mean, you know, now there's a chicken pox vaccine.
Yeah.
And yet you've got parents out there who will throw chicken pox parties. They're anti-vaxxers.
Oh, Jesus.
And they'll have a child with chicken pox, and they'll bring all their unvaccinated children there so all the kids can get chicken pox.
The funny joke is that my father told my mother that he was sterile because he had the mumps.
Bob, you must be being...
Liar, pants on fire.
Yeah,
Bob, I'm assuming when you said that about the chicken pox parties that you were being satirical.
No.
Because nobody would do that kind of thing.
No. Sorry, Larry.
They sure do.
Anti-vaxxers do, Larry. They also vote for Trump.
Anybody ever remember the TB time test?
Oh, yes, sure. I remember that. Yeah.
Oh, they still do that.
I had to get one of those every time I left Okinawa. You go down and they stick that thing in your forearm, and you get it. It's four little deals in it, prongs. And I don't know what they injected, but then you'd have to go back like a week later, and if those things blistered up or whatever, you might have TB.
They don't do that anymore, do they?
No, but I mean I remember.
Yes, they do. I had to get a TB test.
A time test.
It's not the prongs, but it's the it's just a needle, and that shit hurts.
Single needle.
I got
don't like the needle.
That big smallpox. So I have a picture of me as a baby, and on my arm you can see that giant scab. But they stopped doing that too.
Yeah. See, I never got that.
Here's the one where they have the big round circle. You have the
I have a little small circle on my upper left arm from that.
Yeah, that's why I never wanted to get tattoos.
I got a news report, if I could share it with you real quickly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Straight off the presses from the Center for Biological Diversity. It's titled, Trump Comb Over Protected as Habitat for 300 Endangered Species. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has confirmed rumors that the comb over wilderness atop the pate of presidential contender Trump is indeed critical habitat for more than 300 endangered species. Among them is a rare species of mite called the Pityrosporum ovale, with an uncanny ability to survive in white-hot proximity to hubris, shamelessness, and maximum. And he basically has been quoted as saying, the greater Trump tundra, the greatest ecosystem you're ever going to see, absolutely the best, is also the home to two species of owls, a jumping mouse, a flightless flying squirrel, three kinds of blind salamanders, and a spotted frog. And all of those critters are endemic to the region and spend their entire lifespan in Trump's face and coiffure, where they hatch, eat, mate, and ultimately die. They've all evolved to become completely deaf, a mutation that the scientists speculate is vital to their survival. So there you go.
Thank you for that.
Well, at least we know fracking will be illegal in Trump's scalp.
There you go.
Which is a shame, because I'm sure it's a rich source of oil. Oh, Charlie has joined us. I wanted to make sure Charlie got into the conversation. How you doing, Charlie?
Oh, pretty good. How you doing?
Pretty good. Thanks for jumping in and helping out.
Oh, okay.
What's up, Chuck?
No, nothing much. I just wanted to make a comment. Back, I guess it was in the late 80s, whenever I worked at Barksdale Air Force Base. I was over in Shreveport one time, and is this gentleman, you know, was watching me walk, and he wanted to know why I walked so funny. And I told him, I said, well, I was, don't have anything wrong with my leg. I just was born with cerebral palsy. And I said, it affects the left side of my body. And the guy looked at me and he said, well, you could have done something about that. You got that because of your lifestyle. And I just looked at him like, oh my God.
Oh, Charles, they know better. They know we're born with they know we're born with that.
Oh, there you go, there you go, Larry, making those Bay Area assumptions again.
Charles, lifestyle?
Yeah.
Lifestyle? Is he thinking that you would?
I have no idea. I mean, I got the education of a lifetime whenever I lived in Louisiana.
What were you doing at Barksdale?
We had one of the old Sperry mainframe computers down there. And there was about 250 terminals, and we had about 10 spindles of disk, and I maintained all that.
Okay. Your lifestyle. That's God. Sometimes I just, when people talk, it was like the other day when I was at, you know, out there in Norco, and the teabagger started up, and I just, like I said yesterday, I just had to get up and leave because I couldn't, you know, those, like you said, if you can get away from those situations, because sometimes, you know, depending on how I feel, I get in people's faces, but then I got to weigh out, you know, weigh the consequences. It's like, and won't do any good.
Norco?
Huh?
What the hell were you doing in Norco?
I was on my way back from the casino.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I know. It's like, wait, Tracy? Yeah, no, I...
Norco, Corona. Oh, my God. I don't even know what else is by there. Norco, Corona,
just white people. You know, what is it I call it? They're so white. It's like Wonder Bread. What is it? Spam and Velveeta sandwiches.
Is that where the line comes from? Me and Julio down by the schoolyard, goodbye to Rosie, the queen of Corona.
It's Corona Queens.
New York Corona Queens.
Oh, is that Corona? Okay. So, you know, I'm a redneck. I don't know these things. Okay. But I love it. Immediately, two people. No. Corona Queens. Fucking idiot. Yeah.
Hey, Bob, it's not your territory. You can't know everything.
Goddamn yeah. Right. Ask me about Bogalusa sometime.
Bogalusa. Isn't that he related to Omarosa?
Wait a minute. Bogalusa, Alabama?
I can tell you about the Battle of Burnt Corn. Mm-hmm.
Did you really just say the Battle of Burnt Corn?
Yes, the Battle of Burnt Corn.
The Battle of Crispy Critters.
Isn't that Carol's hometown?
Yes.
Carol Baker's hometown?
It's just a stone's throw from Hooterville.
Bogalusa, okay. I thought it was in Alabama somewhere.
I can tell you about East of Boga. Or here in West Virginia, I can tell you about Left Hand and Wolf Run and Looneyville. It was a big loss. We lost the Looneyville post office. People used to take their Christmas cards to the Looneyville post office to have them hand canceled Looneyville.
Oh, isn't that special?
Bernie's doing a rally tonight in Sheboygan.
Wisconsin, yeah.
Sheboygan, Wisconsin.
Sheboygan.
Sheboygan, Wisconsin.
Did you see the picture of Bernie in the Bronx the other day? He was standing on a box in a yard talking to people.
Those were the overflow crowd. Did I post it on Facebook?
Yeah.
I don't even like Spike Lee, but now I'm like, okay, now I have to give Spike Lee his props because he's.
I like Spike
Lee. There's
only
two out of all the movies that Spike Lee has made. There's only two that I really care about: Crooklyn and Malcolm X. Other than that, I can't stand his movies. But when I heard him speaking for Bernie yesterday, I'm like, oh, damn, okay.
Did you see Rosario Dawson speak?
Oh, Rosario Dawson.
Oh, my
God. She wanted to bitch slap Hillary. She's like, shame on you, Hillary. I'm like, she just called that bitch out.
I loved it when she said, oh, wait. I have to watch my tone.
Check it out. When I was at the 2004 anti-Republican convention demonstration in New York City, she was there at that demonstration. She got arrested with 1,000 others. Rosario Dawson, she's from New York, and she's been a justice fighter for years.
Besides being the hottest bitch in the land, other than that, you know.
She's pretty hot, Tracy.
she's Jesus Christ. I'm sorry, what were we talking
about? She was great in Daredevil.
It's like, wait, I just got a hot flash. Hold up.
Tracy, it doesn't hurt to look pretty and be intelligent at the same time.
I know.
But my point was, I brought on Facebook when I posted that last night, was when was the last time you've ever heard about a Hillary overflow crowd?
Never.
That's why I pointed out during the filibuster that, you know, they mentioned that she had a round table at the Technology Institute at Syracuse Central High School. And no mention of the number of people who showed up.
I heard that one thing was 500 people.
Have you guys heard the latest that her numbers are dropping in for non-white voters?
Yes, I heard about that.
Are they really?
Yes, they are.
It only goes back to what Lawrence et al. Said months ago. Hillary's poll numbers never go up. They only go down.
Definitely, it's true.
And I saw something a couple of days ago that Hillary's trailing among people of color in Wisconsin?
Yep.
Uh-oh.
Boy. I've got some primary predictions for Wisconsin. Bernie over Hillary, like, let's say 55 to 44 or 45. And T-Rump is going to get beat by 15 points by Cruz, is my guess. He's down 10 points. Now he's going to get beat by another 5.
Well, I mean, if you go, I mean, as much as, see, here, I think for the first time, he's actually said something that has pissed off enough people that is affecting his polling. He's gotten so used to saying, I can say whatever the fuck I want to say, and my numbers just go up. This time, motherfucker, you just put your, actually put, you putting your foot in your mouth has actually backfired on your dumb ass. But what scares me is, what terrifies me, though, is that his numbers have dropped so much that Cruz will become the, you know, the candidate, and then
I've heard some talk that what could happen is that neither Cruz nor Trump would have enough delegates, and Paul Ryan would be the white horse to the rescue, and his running mate would be somebody like Marco Rubio.
Oh, God.
Oh, God.
Okay. I think definitely that no one is going to have a majority of delegates. I think.
Looking forward to, when is their convention? When is it? July?
Yeah, July.
No, it's July 21st.
Oh, yeah. That's right. It's on my birthday.
Oh, Tracy, I can't make it to your birthday because I told Bill that I'm going to be a reporter at the convention if he can get a press pass for me through his public radio station.
I am not speaking to you. You are dead in my eyes.
That's Cleveland News Alert.
Yeah.
For $8,000, you can rent the boyhood home of Jeffrey Dahmer.
Oh,
that's so inspiring, Sparky. Thank you for telling us that.
I wonder if it. I mean, does it come with appliances? You know, like freezers.
I wonder what the fire.
Oh,
Bob! Yeah.
Well, the picture showed it has a dynamite wood pile underneath the steps.
Is there going to be a continental breakfast served?
Oh.
You know, on second thought, I'm full. I don't need to eat. I'm good. I'm good.
Ew, gross.
It's going to be a paleo diet.
Oh, my God.
Oh, God.
Well, after all, it is a bed and breakfast.
Stop it. Well, wait, stop it. Remember, though, back it up, y'all. You notice it said his boyhood home is not where they caught him. Because remember, they caught him in the hood.
Right, no. This is the home where he tortured the small animals.
Yeah.
The small animals. Is that where he actually killed the people?
That's where he got his start.
Wait,
I just wanted to say that I enjoyed when you played that Nina Turner clip during the week.
Oh,
that
yes.
was amazing. I love that. That was fantastic.
Oh, yeah. She's powerful. Yeah. She can wind up somewhere politically, I suspect.
Yeah. Brooklyn girl.
Who?
She was in Brooklyn. Nina Turner. She was the Hilarion, and then she used to hold office in California. Where was it? In Ohio.
Yeah.
She was the Hilarion, and now she is no longer.
No longer. No. Do you know where the Democratic convention is going to be and when?
It's in Philly.
Okay.
But when is it? I know it's in Philly, but when?
Week after the Republican one, July
28th.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm excited about the Republican. I'm gonna actually watch that shit because, you know, my party's down to the 30th. For those who are not coming, I am so not talking to you people.
Well, damn it, Tracy, I'm sorry.
No. I'm talking about the local people, not you, Bob.
Could I Skype in, Tracy, if I'm in Cleveland? Is that possible?
maybe I should have a big old Skype thing going as well. But I'm going to sit at home on my birthday, y'all, and I'm going to live tweet.
Is it a Friday?
My birthday, I think this year's on a I think it's on a Wednesday. Oh, it would be awesome. It would be too good to be true if it was on a Friday, because we could do Friday night.
Front porch.
Oh, that would be fucking awesome. Nope, it's on a Thursday.
With snacks from the oven of awesomeness.
Yes, the oven of awesomeness. I will be my oven. I mean, I have dreams about my oven, Bob. It is not right to have dreams. I mean, you're talking to my next. You know what my next purchase is going to be? Because you know I got my stand mixer, and now I'm going to have the refrigerator and the oven of awesomeness.
Oh no, she's God damn it, she's appliance.
What is
binging.
It going to be? What's the next thing going to be?
I am going to get what is that? The food preserve, the sucking, the air sucker thingy.
Oh, that, are you a QVC-er?
No, I'm not a QV. I am no way. I'm not black. I'm not white enough to be a QVC.
Oh, it's that thing that you put in and it sucks
food
the air.
Saver. The food saver.
Yeah.
Oh.
Because it has the attachment that sucks not only for plastic bags.
Well,
stuff,
what's the status of the ice cream? Hey, Tracy, what's the status of the ice cream maker?
The ice, you know what? I will be getting. I have the ice cream now that we're moving, and we're going to have two freezers. So I will have a permanent place for my ice cream maker, because like I said, for the stand mixer, you need to keep it in the freezer, and it has to freeze overnight. But I had a really small freezer in my refrigerator, so now that I'm going to be one of those people that actually has a freezer in the garage. I know it's terrible.
Oh, you've arrived.
You know, Bob, the most important thing that can happen, because the conventions are just window dressing. It's basically entertainment. And even the delegates that get there, they really can't do very much. I was at a convention in 2000 in Los Angeles, you remember? But the thing is even if Bernie doesn't get the nomination, usually the platform, the national platform's a foregone conclusion. They decide all these things before the convention actually happens. But the thing is if Bernie can get enough delegates, if he doesn't get the nomination, to be able to influence that platform and be able to influence the Democratic Party in some real way.
Absolutely.
Then I really feel it'll be worth something.
Well, right now, I'm allowing myself the luxury of saying Bernie Sanders will be the nominee. Because, frankly, it's like what Sparky said about what Lawrence O'Donnell said about our numbers. They never go up. They always go down. And there's a sense with a Hillary campaign that you're just waiting for the other shoe to drop. And I think we saw the laces get a little bit untied yesterday with her pointing that extended index finger in the face of that young woman who dared to challenge her about taking money from hydrocarbon into. I'm so sick of that.
How dare you?
Yeah. I didn't even know that happened. I was in the hospital, but I didn't even know that happened. In any case, but she's just there's no there with Hillary.
Let's do remember that the Republican convention exists only to allow really, really kinky, 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 kinky Republicans to go out and get their freak on with the local sex professionals. Cleveland is going to be overrun.
The rumor that Carly Fiorina is going to be the new RNC chair?
Yeah, oh, my God.
Oh, that should be fun.
Let's hope she runs RNC as well as she did HP.
Amen to that.
Let's hope she runs the RNC like she did HP. It'll be awesome.
Yeah, running.
Or
into the ground.
Maybe we could just have a bloodless secession, and Hillary could be president of the could run for presidency of the Confederacy against Trump. Because I mean, that seems to be where the greatest amount of her support is.
Yep.
Which should give pause to any progressive.
Yeah, I was all excited about that, and I said, "Honey, it's the South. They weren't going to vote for a Jew." She has the people down there bamboozled. Because, I mean, I hate to say it. I mean, like, let's face it. I mean, you notice, think about the educational level of the people of the states that are voting for Bernie as opposed to the states that are getting Hillary. That's horrible to say, but am I wrong?
No, you're not. You are not. The states that went heaviest for Hillary have the lowest educational standards in the entire United States. And unfortunately, with that, I got to get out of here. Thank you, Tracy, for jumping in there And thank you to Charlie, and thank you, Andrew. Thank you very kindly. Thank you to Jay for
That's
getting
okay. I'm
us
looking
started.
Forward to you next week on Mike Malloy.
Oh, it's going to be fun. It's going to be fun. And I don't even have to worry about saying booger. So, no, I think it's going to be a blast, and hopefully we'll get some good callers and carry on and raise a ruckus. Thank you, Andrew, and thank you everybody for jumping in. I hope you all have a lovely weekend. Thank you, Sparky, as ever, for moderating the Horn Malloy Skype chat group. Thanks to Billable Rick and Larry and Tim and Tracy and Charlie, Alex, Andrew, Jules. Thank you all for jumping into the conversation. I'm already looking forward to more in Monday, and a little bit of break over the weekend. According to the official Horn studio clock on the wall, it's still folding space, and it's 20 minutes after 9 here, but it's not. It's 9, and we're out of here. And by the way, the Horn Malloy Skype chat will continue. Let me check back in. Since there's no Malloy tonight, what's the status on the chat, Sparky?
It goes and goes.
So jump right in. There's more fun to be had. Thanks to everybody who spends your precious finite time engaged in this little long-running conversation. Thank you one and all to everyone who supports us and got us through March, helped us beat the Swede, we are officially, with the first day of April, on track to beat the Swede in April, too. Beat the Swede all year long, courtesy of our buddy Scott. And always, Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.